nobody wins the Super Bowl because they had one good pass, one good play, right? It's not how it is. And with podcasting, there's no podcast that just went viral once in the news and then made their host millions of dollars. You have to be consistently good all the time. You have to earn every minute of your listeners' time.
Welcome to Between Two Mics.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Rock.
We're the co-founders of Squadcast.fm.
The best way to record remote interviews in studio quality like this one.
Here on Between Two Mics, we explore the challenges, opportunities, and new ideas with the people who are pushing the limits of what's possible in podcasting.
The Jordan Harbinger Show is an extremely successful podcast that is hosted by our friend, mentor, and distinguished advisor to Squadcast, Jordan Harbinger. Jordan's story as a podcaster goes way back. He's a Wall Street lawyer turned tour guide to North Korea. That's a good story. Turned famous podcaster when Apple named the Jordan Harbinger Show best of 2018. And he regularly reaches over 7 million listeners each month. It's no surprise that he regularly interviews people like Kobe Bryant, Annie Duke, and Bill Nye. My favorite episode is Jordan's conversation with chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov. Let's dive into our conversation with JH. Jordan, finally, welcome. Welcome to Between Two Mics.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. And in a lot of ways, like, you know, you are, I think, a prototypical, like the prototype for a professional podcaster, which so many of our listeners and customers and people in the podcast community are aspiring to become. So I know it's been quite a journey for you from our past conversations to get to this point or to any amount of success. But I also know you have quite a lot of hustle in your game, and that often gets left out from the things I've heard you discuss on other people's shows. And I think, you know, CDs and all this stuff, like early podcast days we've talked about in the past. But rather than trying to ask you your backstory and all of that, because I think people are well aware, where do you want to start? Where's a good place to start for you?
You're asking me. I'm not sure. I mean, look, what's going to be the most valuable for the people listening that people normally don't talk about? That's the question, right?
Yeah, I think it's the qualities of what it takes to become a professional podcaster. So from your perspective, you've done that a couple different ways. So like, mm-hmm. what does that look like to you?
First of all, I mean, look, a lot of it is just purely being as stubborn as possible. So for me, it's constantly being like, oh, well, this is slow to grow. Keep figuring out what's working. Where am I getting my data from? You know, for years, we didn't have things like Chartable. So we had to figure out solutions on our own. Early days, we were using things like Skype and Ecamm call recorder, which could crash, go down. You had to run it on our end because you couldn't ask the guest to run anything. That was never going to happen. Getting them to download and install Skype was hard half the time. And they're using their keyboard mic and everything. So you're constantly putting out fires and solving problems just like in any business. But you also have to be... You have to be part hobbyist and part businessman. You know, if you are doing podcasting for the money, it's like the worst way to make money. It's like the worst way on the internet to make money quickly, I should say. Now at a certain level of scale, it's great for me because I can put out content and do a nice living for myself and my family, of course. But in the beginning, it's so slow going. And I think a lot of people who look at it purely as a business, from a business standpoint, initially, they get disappointed and discouraged because they go, hey, I'm going to start a bit. I've got friends, seriously, that have started businesses that they've sold for like $200 million, $50 million, whatever. And like, I'm going to start a podcast. I love having smart conversations with people and I can teach people business stuff. And then like 3 months in, they're just like, okay, what the hell? This is so hard. And I go, dude, you just sold your company to Salesforce. And he goes, yeah, but like we had metrics and we had KPIs and we had all these things that you just can't even get like enough data for podcasting. And I had offices. Podcasting is like this weird Wild West. Nobody seems to know what's going on. Monetization is tough. You know, you have to be performing. You have to be hustling constantly. And it's kind of vindicating to hear that. But it also makes me think, crap, I could have just focused my energy somewhere else and had a $200 million company instead of this podcast.
I wouldn't count that out yet for you, Jordan.
It's
you
possible.
Continue to just reach new highs. But I want to unpack that a little bit more just because it is a theme that we hear repeatedly is that podcasting rewards persistence, consistency, stubborn is a great word, I think, too. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is from your perspective?
Why do I think that...
Podcasting is just slower growth.
There's no algorithm. There's no algorithm, right? Like the discoverability is essentially non-existent other than word of mouth. And so a lot of people who come from, let's say, the social media or YouTube world, they're like, oh yeah, you know, you do a couple of things here and there and then you go viral and you have your friends who have a big profile, like do a collab with you and shout you out. And then you've got this content trends up and they don't necessarily know how that stuff works. But I know a lot of sort of top YouTube people that have millions of subscribers, you know, in the top, I guess, probably 1% of YouTube. And they'll say things like, yeah, growing the podcast is just a hobby. It's just way too hard. There are people I know that have millions of YouTube subscribers and they'll start a podcast and they're like, yeah, we have 18,000 downloads an episode. What the hell? You know, how come? And I go, well, getting people to go from your prank videos where you jump on people's tables full of food or do a collab with PewDiePie or whatever you're doing, they don't want to listen to an hour-long conversation with a scientist. They want to watch you throw pies at each other just like you do on your channel. And even intelligent channels where they're having conversations with scientists on YouTube, those people don't go, oh, I want to not watch and then listen during the other time during the day. They're people who have their YouTube time in the evening or during their lunch break, and that's what they're doing. Podcast listeners, on the other hand, have way more time during the day, but they're loyal to a few shows because there are so many shows. So people, to get somebody to ditch a podcast they already like and go to another one, it's tough. It's a tall order. But to get somebody to follow you on YouTube, Instagram, and look at your crap at the same time that they're looking at someone else's crap, it's just like so low friction. But also the quality's lower of that follower. And, you know, people debate this with me all the time. They're like, oh, no, a follower is a follower. And, you know, as long as you get your demographic. And I go, cool, tell me why my ads are $30 CPM and yours are $4 CPM. And if you can answer that question while somehow coming to the conclusion that a follower is a follower, just go ahead. You know, I'll pack it in. But I know from my YouTube friends that they'll say things like they made, you know, $20,000 from YouTube last month or 25 or 30. And I go, that's great. And they're like, oh, yeah, thanks. And I go, you mean per video, though, right? You release 4 videos a month. And they're like, no, for the whole month. And I go, how is that even possible? You have 600,000 people watching each one of these. You sell T-shirts and you got ads running and you got integrations. And they go, yeah. And I break it down, man. They're getting 3, 4, 5, maybe if they're lucky, a higher CPM. There's no podcast anywhere that makes that little of amount of money, so CPM, in terms of CPM. There's nobody. I buy podcast ads all the time. You know, I spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on ads on other shows to grow the Jordan Harbinger Show. I've never been able to get a CPM under $10 other than when I'm paying my friends directly with no middleman, no sales guy, and they're doing me a favor. You know, that there's no chance in hell. So for that to be like the retail take of a YouTube channel, that just shows you that that audience is worth far less, like 10% of the 10% of the amount. And in other words, if I'm getting $30 CPM and they're getting $3 CPM, that says that 10 followers on YouTube is worth one follower on a podcast. Doesn't always work out that way exactly. Of course, there's huge flux. Some podcasts get 20, some YouTubers get 5 to $8. But either way, a follower is not a follower when you look at it that way. And the only thing I can say and I have plenty to say in YouTube's defense as well, which is to grow a YouTube channel to 1 million subscribers is far, 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 far easier than getting a podcast to 1 million subscribers. There's probably 2 hands, maybe some fingers and toes worth of podcasts in the entire ecosystem that get over 1 million downloads per episode. There are, I'm guessing, hundreds of YouTube channels that have over 1 million subs. I don't have the exact stats, but hundreds and hundreds at least, right? If not thousands. So that's an entirely different beast. There's just less friction. The market's bigger, et cetera. So there's a lot more there. So yes, it can be a volume play, but I like my loyal followers on the podcast because my advertisers like them. They're very active. They share a lot. It's just a different beast. And if the algorithm changes, this is why I love podcasting. If the algorithm changes, well, there's no algorithm in podcasting, so I'm fine. But I know I've been on the internet since, you know, the 90s. I've had businesses on the internet since the early aughts. So I've seen people who were making millions of dollars per month, literally, go to making like 10 grand a month overnight because Google went, hey, we don't really like it when you have an 18-page sales letter that's full of lies and then a buy now button on your page. That just looks like one of those scam sites. We're going to take those off our Google results, or at least off the first page. So now you're not showing up first for like how to meet women or how to grow marijuana in your basement or whatever these guys were selling. Now you're just not showing up much at all. And so they go from that, or they can't advertise anymore. And 99% of their conversion is based on advertising. Those people just get screwed by a policy from Google, Facebook. You know, remember when you had to build a Facebook fan page in order to have any kind of business on the internet? Now, if you built a fan page and you spend $1 million doing it, congrats, you get to pay $1 million a month to reach those same people all over again. Mm-hmm. Podcasting is an open ecosystem, so I don't really have to worry about that. Spotify can screw things up for everyone. Apple could theoretically screw things up for everyone if they really wanted to. But even then, you've still got an open ecosystem, and so it's less likely for that to happen because one actor can't just make a policy change and demolish the whole industry.
See, this is why I love talking to you, man. We get the background perspective of here, how the game is played at your level. So that's awesome. And I think for most podcasters that start their show, you know, most shows that are started are interview shows, and a lot of times they want to interview interesting people. So you really are like, again, at the pinnacle of that. What's it like to release a show and then millions of people are listening to it? What's that like for you?
I ignore that a lot. I mean, not totally, but like right now, I had Billy McFarland on today from Firefest, and it got hit by the New York Times, Vanity Fair, Spin Magazine, and a bunch of like Vulture and all these blogs. And everyone's like, whoa, this is so cool. And I'm like, hey, man, I've had bad days and I've had good days. It's like that. There's this Chinese parable that is going to make me sound way deeper than I am in real life. But it's like there's this farmer that has a son, and his son is like falls off a horse and breaks his leg. And he's like, everyone's like, oh, it's such bad luck. And the farmer's like, I don't know, we'll see what happens. And then the army comes by and is like, we're looking for soldiers. Can't take your son. He's got a broken leg. And people are like, whoa, such good luck. And he's like, oh, we'll see what happens. And there's all these other things that happen to this guy. And it's like, well, we'll see how it shakes out. That's how I am with everything. Like nobody wins the Super Bowl because they had one good pass, right? One good play. It's not how it is. And with podcasting, there's no podcast that just went viral once in the news and then made their host millions of dollars. Even Serial grew over time and it was word of mouth, and they have two other seasons no one cares about. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like they had, but you have to be consistently good all the time. You have to earn every minute of your listeners' time. So it is this, it's good for me because it's a game of like being consistently B+, which is like right in my sweet spot. Consistently B+. You don't have to hit home runs regularly or ever. You just grow brick by brick by brick, and then you turn around one day and you've got a house built. Whereas with YouTube, you have to like constantly figure out what the masses want, and whether that's like pranks or you training for a boxing match and fighting another YouTuber or all the other stupid stunts those guys do. Their entire life is just stunts to remain relevant. It's really got to be a horrible way to live. I know a lot of these people personally, they have like fake romances with other influencers that those people have, like they can combine their following. Then they have like fake drama between them and other people. So they have fake beef and they can make smack talk videos and raps. And it's just kind of pathetic. You know,
it's the only way to sum it up. I was just going to say, oh, that's tight.
Like, yeah, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. And also like it just makes you think, okay, so if you don't have some kind of BS thing, if you're not constantly trying to innovate what's going to grab attention, if you're not like the National Enquirer of media, you just quickly become irrelevant. Whereas with podcasting, you can find a niche, you can build that niche. You know, on the Jordan Harbinger show, I'm talking with like military generals and spies and arms traffickers and psychologists and neuroscientists. And the audience, what they have in common is they like smart, interesting discussions. I don't have to be like, oh my God, I have this person on this week. It's amazing. And next week we have this other crazy cretin on. I can just have smart talks and I don't have to worry about pushing it on social or it falls off the map, stuff like that.
Right.
I see a lot of influencers that have to promote something every day of the week, 7 days a week. They got like 20 Instagram stories going, because if you don't, adios.
Yeah.
Algorithm punishes you. And with podcasting, you can just put out one. Look at Dan Carlin, right? Hardcore History. Doesn't give a crap about social media. Doesn't really worry about his email list. Probably sits home, watches documentaries, reads really dense books, writes a bunch of stuff. And then once a quarter goes, or once every 6 months or whatever it is, goes, you know, I'm going to voice over this whole thing that I just wrote. It's pretty good. I rewrote it like six times. Voices it over, edits it up, puts it out there. 4 million people listen to it. They hear an ad for some mobile company. He buys a new summer home in Nantucket with the cash and then just sits down in his new home, reads a bunch of books, watches a bunch of documentaries, and people love it because it's high quality stuff. The algorithm on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, it literally doesn't give a crap about high quality content. It just wants eye-grabbing, attention-grabbing stuff. So there's no incentive for people to be like, hey, this is where you can get some really smart, good content.
Mm-hmm.
TED Talks do that. They do that. But that's like the one place where you can find. I can't think of that many other channels. And I look for this stuff on YouTube. It's tricky to find channels like that. I find small channels like that that make no money. And the creators are like broke and have day jobs, which is sad because they're really good at what they do. But there's just not that many huge, super smart channels. And the ones that there are, like TED, it's a multi-million dollar media company. It's not some guy in his garage. Podcasting allows some dude with a dad bod in a garage like me to sit around, read books, talk to smart people, put it up on the internet and be like, wow, I'm making more money than I did when I was a lawyer. This is dope.
I think it really speaks to the quality of the medium, right? Of the how important quality is at every level of podcasting, right? We focus on production quality here at Squadcast, but I think what you're getting to is the quality of the audience is higher. The volume is comparatively lower, but because it's all up to you. Like, what do you care about, right? And the compound interest is something that nature of podcasting is something that Rock and I talk about often with other guests on the show and just people at meetups in the community, in interviews. And it's one of the things that I think is I love about podcasting, because you could say, oh, it's actually like a weakness of podcasting that there's no algorithm for you to game, and therefore how do you do something that's predictable? But what you're saying is actually the opposite. It's like, oh, it's actually much more predictable. Mm-hmm. It just takes time and quality instead of like all these different hacks to get you to the trending feed on YouTube or
Absolutely.
Whatever the platform is.
I'm telling you, whenever I see these internet marketer guys that have like bought all their TikTok followers and bought all their Instagram followers and like have contests for you win an iPad if you follow me and tag five friends, like those guys, they come to podcasting and it is their Stalingrad, right? They come in here that for nerds, that means they get wrecked and run through the meat grinder. They come to podcasting and they're like, yeah, I'm going to dominate it. I'm going to buy all this and I'm going to buy downloads. And I'm going to buy reviews and I'm going to buy pay people and get a contest. Da, da, da. And then I check in on them in like a year and they're like, bro, I've spent $2 million on this and I have 20,000 downloads per episode. What the hell? And I'm like, oh, you frustrated? Your content sucks, man. Nobody wants to hear it. And they're like, well, what's the shortcut? Because on TikTok, they can buy eyeballs. They can buy ads for their YouTube videos where they're spending $10,000 per video. They get millions of views for that much. You know, they can sort of game everything else. And they figure, oh, they're just going to do the same thing with podcasting. And it's funny to watch these sort of arrogant marketer guys come in with their money and all of their ideas and go, oh yeah, no one at my level's thought about how they're going to crush podcasting. And they get into podcasting and then like a year or two later, they're like, screw podcasting. There's no money in it. And I'm like, oh really? As I like make it rain. Well, singles anyways, in podcasting, that my single US dollar, my George Washington's down on them from my podcast tower, because it's just, there's nothing to really cheat on. Even if you buy your way to the top 10 of iTunes before you get banned by Apple for doing that, you get 100, 200 new listeners as a result. People aren't looking at the charts all the time. They're looking for what their smart friends are listening to or their fun friends are listening to. They are not converting from your stupid social media, depending, at least not in large numbers. So it's very, very much the great equalizer. You know, for a guy like like Will Ferrell to do a show and for it to be like marginally more popular than the Jordan Harbinger show is pretty gratifying. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Not just to me, only to me, actually. His network is probably like, what is going on? We gave this guy $10 million and we have this thing that's like essentially should have made a movie. Money. Should have just made a movie. Yeah. But to have like, you see these news stories all the time in the podcasting news. I won't name any other names because like Will's show is successful as far as I know, the Anchorman one. But there are a lot of comedians that have shows and it'll be like Spotify pays so and so $8 million for limited run podcast series. And they like cancel it after the first season. And they just go, yeah, that didn't work. Turns out nobody wanted to hear what so-and-so thought about nothing every single day for 2 months or, you know, eight times a month. And they just get screwed. And that's because people really have to put their time, not just their money, where their mouth is in podcasting. If you're going to make social media content, you can get it in front of everyone. It can be consumed in a few seconds. Asking somebody to watch or sorry, to listen to something for an hour, it doesn't matter how much you put that in front of them. If they don't want to spend that time with you, they won't. And that's why with podcasting, you build such an awesome audience. For my 40th birthday in February, before everything got locked down, I went to a maximum security prison to do some volunteering work. And I thought I had this idea to raise money for the prison educational program that was this nonprofit by bringing show fans with me to the prison for my birthday party, in air quotes. Actually, we did have a party in the prison, but it was more of an educational thing than a party for me. And I charged people $1,000 to go, and all the money went to the prison educational program, not to me. And so they raised so much money, they had to cap the program because they were out of space in the prison for people to come and volunteer. They paid to volunteer, and we raised enough money to run the whole program for like the entire year, the next year, and then some, because their goal was 50 grand. We raised like 70 grand. We brought 72 people because I brought my wife and I for free. So that was like and I thought, who on social media is going to be able to bring 70 people to a maximum security prison? You'd have to have a ton of followers that are going to fly across the world. People came from Australia to do this. Okay. Wow. And Korea and stuff to do this. And I thought, this is the result of spending 3 hours with me every single week for 14 years. I mean, not everybody listened that long, but you get the idea.
Sure.
There are a lot of people I follow on social media. I can't remember their names. I see their stuff every day. Sometimes I watch it. With the podcast, people feel like they know, they do know you. They're in a parasocial relationship with you. So when I say, hey, this is a good mattress, you should buy it. And also it supports the show. People go bananas for this mattress, but it can also be used for things that are a little more important, like prisoners learning how to get jobs when they leave. So that to me is what's really cool about it. You can do a lot of good and you don't have to do buzzwordy, trendy stuff. I'm not doing the ice bucket challenge and all that other crap. I'm just doing deep work. Not just 7,000 little videos that get posted every hour by my team. You know, it's just, it's more gratifying. I don't know anybody, including the people at the top of the social media game, that love having to figure out what to post every single hour of the day. I just don't know anybody that enjoys it that much. They enjoy the vanity metrics,
right?
And the dopamine, the likes.
On the other end of it.
Yeah, they enjoy the dopamine. They like the likes. But with podcasting, I'm just feeling that Dan Carlin stuff where I'm like, read books, talk to smart people. That's what's good about it. Don't even get me started on production cost. I've started filming all my stuff before COVID and I was like, okay, fly out there, bring my $15,000 worth of gear, have a videographer that can make sure everything works, get a studio space, record everything. Great. I still do that for like when I had Kobe Bryant and when I have these really big names on the Jordan Harbinger show, I always try to do that. But with the regular shows, I just jump on Squadcast. If I need to, I send them a $40 USB microphone and some headphones, and it sounds like we're in the same room, and nobody goes, oh man, where's the video? They just don't care. They are listening anyway. Even when I put up videos that are just a static image of the guest and it's us talking, I rarely get complaints about that. Sometimes people are like, oh, I wish we had a video. Well, yeah, not for $15,000. I don't want to do that. You know, I have to pay someone to edit that, fly out there, everything. With podcasting, I mean, you guys know this, we can record podcasts on mobile devices, you know, as long as you're a little bit more flexible on quality. And once Squadcast, you guys work out that it can work on mobile devices, which is coming soon, I know, we'll be able to plug in Lightning devices or whatever to the iPhones, and we'll just be able to sit there with lavaliers on and we'll be able to do the thing from our kitchen. You won't need anything expensive to do this. It will always be expensive enough to produce and edit video because it's labor intensive. You need cameras, you need lighting, you need a space. Podcasting is just a totally different beast.
So I saw the your birthday party at the prison and how many people came, and I was like, how the heck did he think of that? Like, it's it looked like a good time though, but I think it goes back to something you said earlier about how you need to earn every minute of the listener's time. Like, what goes through your head on what does that mean to you? Like, how are you earning everyone's time? Because I could see how it could get easy, especially with when you could just, you know, send it in and just get in front of the mic. It sounds like you're just so interested in it that you want to keep hitting new levels and stuff. But like, how can we continue as podcasters to earn our listeners' time? I don't think everyone thinks of it like that, but I know, knowing you, I know it's genuine.
Yeah. Well, I used to be an attorney, right? And when you're an attorney, you're an advocate for the person, the client. You know, you don't get to do what's best for you. You don't do what's best for somebody else. You do what's best for your client. It's a fiduciary duty, right? So I think of podcasting like that. So if I get an ad for some product that looks like garbage, I just tell them, hey, no, I don't want to advertise for this. And it makes my network sales reps a little irked sometimes. They're like, you don't want a $60,000 campaign for such and such. And I'm like, no, that's a multi-level marketing company, or it's bad for the environment, or these things shouldn't even be made and produced because they're just garbage. People just throw them away. I'm not going to convince people to get this, and then they're going to be upset. And so I just don't take those ads because it's not going to be good for the audience. They're going to buy it and go, I don't like it. And then that's going to reflect poorly on me, of course.
Right.
Additionally, there'll be guests that say, hey, or potential guests that say, I'll give you $25,000 or $50,000 if I can come on the Jordan Harbinger show and talk about my protein powders or whatever. And I go, you know what? You can buy ads for your protein powders. They look high quality. Your story is not interesting enough for me to put my credibility as a storyteller and an interviewer on the line, because you only get a few passes where people listen and go, yeah, that one wasn't for me. And they'll go, you know what? But I like his other stuff. I like your other stuff, Jordan. So I've got faith in you. I just didn't like that particular guy or that particular woman. That's fine. But if they get a whiff that you did something because you got paid for it, but you spent their time listening to it, then they go, okay, now I have to evaluate every episode of your show and say, do I want to listen to this? Or is this just something that Jordan is getting a check on and I'm just kind of supposed to skip it, right? That you don't want that to be a question in your listener's mind. You want to think every person that Jordan has on the Jordan Harbinger show is something that Jordan is interested in. I don't have to agree with him, but he's not being inauthentic or disingenuous. He's not tricking me. And I have to be really careful about that too, because I look at it like this. If I have a bad guest on, I might have spent 10 hours, 20 hours prepping them at the most, right? And I spend another hour, 2 hours interviewing them. But if I send that to 250,000 plus people and they listen to it, I've wasted 250,000 hours of their time and 20, 30 hours, 22 hours, 10 hours of my time. That is grossly unfair. So for me to do that and then go, well, I already did the work, I'm going to release it. That's just me saying my money that I get from the ads in this episode, which I can get by putting something else out anyway, is worth more to me than 250,000 hours of your time because I don't care about you. That nothing says I don't care about you like wasting someone's time. So to do it to 250,000 people is like, it's horrible. Imagine inviting, selling tickets to a stadium. You sell out the entire thing, biggest stadium in the world. And then everybody comes and they're like, I can't believe we got Super Bowl tickets. And you go, ah, you know what, suckers? We're not even going to do anything. Go buy some hot dogs. Screw y'all. They're going to be like, I'm never buying. This guy's a horrible person. I feel conned. I'm never going to trust this person again. So why would you do that with your audience? You know, and a lot of podcasters, they'll put up junk because they're like, I need an episode this week. I already read the book. I'm just going to do it. You just can't do it. You know, you got to think about what's best for the listener. And if you're just thinking about your own pocketbook, like that's going to blow up in your face.
Comically similar to Fire Festival. I think that this is exactly what we encourage podcasters and exactly like, I think seems like you found that through, you know, your background, you're intrinsically trying to help people and like actually earn their time, not just like willy-nilly kind of spending their time. So I think that's, you know, a currency that we should look at like more like dollars, right, is our time. And through that lens, like the ROI has got to be clear, right? And it's often not with podcasters. They're thinking, oh, this interview is good for me. It's good for my guest. It's good for my company, maybe. But is it good for the audience? Is kind of a secondary question or a tertiary question. So I'm glad that that was intrinsic to you and intrinsic to us. But how do you think we can get that to be more in the conversation amongst the podcast community?
I think a lot of people are afraid to kill their darlings, as you say, in show business, where they'll write, like if you write, I think that expression comes from, let's say you're a playwright or a screenwriter, you write something and you've got this hilarious joke or this awesome scene that you wrote and you love it, you love it, you love it. And then during the final meeting or whatever, where everyone's writing, they go, yeah, just, it doesn't fit in the episode. It's hilarious. It's funny. It's poignant, whatever it is. It doesn't quite go in here. You have to sort of go like, damn it, right? And you take it and you remove it and you think maybe you'll use it later or maybe not, but you have to kind of kill your darlings. And you really have to do that with podcasting too. You'll have an episode where you think it's so interesting. And then if you're just really honest with yourself, you realize, I only thought that was interesting because this person is cool and I'm a fan of them and they gave me a compliment and they, I don't know, paid me or they were otherwise interested in me personally. Is the audience really going to be interested in this? And you know that you're lying to yourself if you say no. So you really do have to kind of kill your darlings, because there might be like, this might be like your favorite episode because the person gave you some life-changing advice that doesn't apply to anybody else.
Yeah. Profound, right? Like, yeah. Can be.
And then it's like, But why would anybody in your audience want to listen to this? Now, that might be a bad example, because if you get life-changing advice, it might apply to some people out there. But I'm just struggling to think of an example. However, there are plenty of episodes that are obviously not a fit for the audience, like somebody who cuts you a check. I know a lot of podcasters charge guests to come on the show. And I'm just thinking, so now you're taking guests that are in the sour spot of not big enough to get on your show for free. So therefore haven't necessarily made a good footprint, done the work, created an interesting story, whatever it is, but also are not small enough where they don't have the money. So you've got the people who really know how to monetize their business and are going to try and then monetize your audience. That's why they're cutting you a check. So now you've got all these people on that go, okay, I gave you 10 grand. I need to make that 10 grand back and then some. So I'm going to pitch my crap every 5 minutes during the interview. Shout out to the Jordan Harbinger show. And I'm also going to, you know, try and collect your email addresses or whatever it is. Like, those people are going to try to do that. And it's like, I can't think of anything that is less in the interest of your listener than taking money to have a guest appearance like that. That's not interesting, or to somehow mixing up the incentive. So I think the way you get that to be the conversation inside podcasting is you just say, hey, no, zero big shows have ever been shared, gotten a huge loyal audience because they just took the easy money. That's not how it works. People create long lasting shows that last and stand the test of time because they actually care about the audience. So the audience shares it. People comment on it. They send it to their friends. They listen for years on end. They feel loyalty. So they support your sponsors. So the sponsors renew and come back. That's how you build that loyal audience. Nobody's ever built a loyal audience by trying to monetize that audience as fast as possible. That's what internet marketers do. And, you know, I know a lot of people are going, but so-and-so's an internet marketer and they have a big show. Let me stop you right there. No, they don't. They're probably lying. I've never met an internet marketer that actually has a big show. I know they say, I've got 10 million downloads. Yeah, since 2008. Okay? Yes. And over all of that time, they, if you round up, have 10 million downloads, if you count their YouTube plays also, or whatever sort of crap. And I know this because I do a lot of consulting with these guys, and I'm like, okay, so show me the downloads. And they're like, here you go. And I go, you said 10 million. Well, I counted my TikTok, and I counted my Instagram plays, and I counted my YouTube streams, and I counted my podcast thing, and I added them all up over the course of the life of the entire program. And then I rounded up, which means I, you know, added 2 million on top. And I'm like, okay, so this is a bunch of bullshit. You know, like that's that I've seen that a lot. And it's just not great. And the other thing is I have seen internet marketers and folks like that that do have like medium sized shows. And I think to myself, man, you'd have a really legit big show now if you didn't just shove products down people's throats every single episode or have crappy guests on because their check cleared. You'd have a legit big show that people respected, but instead you have this small to medium sized show that you monetize and you just burn your audience as fast as you can because you don't respect them enough to think that they'll stick around. And they're also right. You know, they won't stick around. So it's a different strategy. I choose the strategy that I think is going to serve the audience best. Not everybody does that. And I get it. It's harder. It's harder and it takes longer. So I'm not, I get it. I am judging you, but I get it.
Yeah, it's the high road, right? And also, I'm wondering if that's why I hear people from time to time say like, oh, podcasting hasn't quite arrived yet because there's no algorithm to game or there's no way to take these like internet marketing approaches and apply them to podcasting. But I don't think we define podcasting like being a legit medium by those measures. And it doesn't sound like you do either, right? Like that's not what this game is. That's not what podcasting is.
No, and it's a $1 billion industry, I think, this year or this coming year. It's like on track to be that, which is small, but also not that small, right? Especially when you think that there's 1.5 million podcasts, but only like 250,000 or 300,000 are active shows. And then probably of that, only like 1% of those are professional, quote unquote, monetized shows, or maybe the top 5%, something like that, or like monetizable podcast shows. So think about that. Like what industry that's worth $1 billion or more has 95% of it just not doing anything? Social media, probably for sure, but that's an even bigger beast. Very few people go, oh, check us out on social media. We're the New York Times or BBC. They're using that to tell these tiny short stories. The major followings are always on podcasts or in the actual publication because that's where long form deep work takes place. And that's where people who are looking for that find it. So I don't really think that there needs to be an algorithm. It'd be great if there were more discovery tools, but the last thing any industry needs is for a gatekeeper to say, here's what we're going to make sure everyone sees and listens to. That's where thought bubbles start to come into play. I mean, that's where we see all kinds of disruption from places like Facebook that we know are bad for democracy. Do we really want to encourage that because it makes it easier to make money for your stupid protein shake business? You're like, no, I don't think we do. I don't think we want to ruin something that is like one of the only places where we can have open, honest, free conversations and people can't just deplatform you all the time at a whim or deprioritize you. I don't think we want to change that because then it makes it easier for the lowest common denominator of marketer to make money. Good. I want those people to stay out. Stay out. Y'all have ruined enough crap. Go go keep ruining TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. You don't need to ruin podcasting.
Hear, hear. You mentioned gatekeepers and you also spoke of Spotify, Apple a little bit earlier. What's your take on all the developments with Spotify and SiriusXM and, you know, Apple may not. I mean, like you said, they could, if they chose to do something, they probably could, you know, significantly change the space. What's your take on that? Is it something that you're excited about or still on the fence about, or there's obviously a camp that thinks it's really bad and going to kill podcasting? Where do you land in that?
I mean, I'm excited about Spotify because I think that they are going to help discovery. I think that they are going to help people find new shows based on their interests, just like they help me find new artists. You know,
it look, works.
Plays to their works. Strengths. Yeah, right?
It works.
Like I, you know, if you listen to Cascade on Spotify, it'll suggest new people for you. Yeah, there's featured people in there, but it's not like that's the only thing I see when I log in. I'm not scrolling. I'm searching for what I want and listening to what I want. That's good. Can they change it and go down a dark path? Yes. Can they put ads in between or even potentially during my show if I upload it to Spotify? Yeah, and I don't really like that, but here's the thing. when you're a podcaster, what's valuable about what you do is your relationship with your audience. So all the people that are like, they're going to put ads between my show. Cool. It's going to be some voiceover guy that's not you talking about buy a mattress, buy this particular brand of protein bar. It doesn't matter. My audience is listening for what I recommend, not just for what generally gets recommended in the feed. That's what social media does. So I'm far less worried about that. The endorsement is why my ads are $30, $35 CPM. Not because it happens to hit my audience and demographic. So I do worry that that can be misused. I'm hoping that what Spotify decides to do is grow the amount of people listening to shows on the platform. And so far, that's what it looks like they're going to do. I'm also preparing for them to not necessarily do that, because it might be easier for them to monetize doing something else. So I'm preparing for them to do that or to go down a dark path doing it. So that could be a problem. So I'm, you know, budgeting for things like, okay, maybe you're going to have to buy Spotify ads to get your show featured. Good. I'm going to earmark a ton of money for that in the future if I need to. You know, I'm going to make sure that I'm future-proofed there. But I don't think Spotify is going to want, I don't think the economic incentives are such that they're going to say, hey, we only want people listening to our Spotify exclusives. That's not going to make any sense for them. There's far too many types of people out there, far too many people with different tastes for them to just want to listen to shows that are exclusive to Spotify. It doesn't make any sense for them to want to do that. They want people to bring their audience into that ecosystem, yes, but they have to compensate the creators for that. So that's good. Also, people who pay for Spotify Premium, they're not going to want to hear a bunch of random ads between shows and during the show, but they can't really keep our ads out of the shows on the platform. If they eventually tried to do that, cool, but then you're going to see a ton of creators be like, fine, then you can't carry my show. It's my intellectual property. People forget, as creators, we have the right to tell them that they can't have our show on there, and they have to, by law, take it down. People forget that. You know, people were like, oh my God, they're scraping my show. Write them an email. They will gladly take you off the platform. Now, later on, that might hurt if that's the biggest place where people listen to your stuff and they're running ads between your show. But that means you strengthen the relationship you have with your audience, and then your endorsement is worth more. So I just don't really see kind of this dystopian future in which creators never get paid anything and Spotify makes all the money, and we can't make a living doing this. They're not incentivized to run us out of business. We're the ones that bring all the people to the platform. Just like the artists went, oh my God, Spotify only plays me pennies for every album play. And now every artist is like, every label's like, can you get our people featured on Spotify? Hey, can you get us in there?
And change the industry.
It changed the whole industry. And only super holdouts like, what is it, Metallica and Taylor Swift or something, who have massive market power, they go, oh, it's not fair to the artist. And what they're saying is, look, I know I can be the holdout here and still make a crap load of money and make even more than everyone else, but their label is not doing that. Their label has every other artist in there. There's no label that said you cannot have any of our artists. It's the individual artists that are doing that. And they're doing that for themselves. They're not doing it for the music industry. The music industry, if you count it as the labels, those people are making plenty of money.
Yeah, I love that we can future-proof, like you said, and also for all these potentials, like we can kind of see the future in other industries, right? Like with how Spotify has treated creatives in music, or like YouTube has treated people with video, right? Like we can see the future in other industries and how that can be at play. We actually touched on that in one of the last founder episodes we did on Between Two Mics, with talking about RSS and how there's different camps of that, but we can kind of see the future by looking at the rest of the web and how this has evolved there. So I think that that's a really interesting perspective that you hold. And I think it's something that we tend to agree on. Exciting times, to say the least. And anything else you're looking forward to? And, you know, I think it's a tough question to say what's the future, what's next, but that is what this show is about. So I'm curious if you have any kind of like Evo Terra style pontifications on where podcasting is going.
You know, I'm looking forward to some new tech that helps advertisers and helps us get people to convert more. For example, I don't want to give away anything because I'm advisors in certain places, as you know, but there's going to be tech soon that lets you go directly to an advertiser when you hear about it, places where you can select an email to be sent to you or opt into something based on what you hear on a podcast, new chartable type software where you can measure attribution. Hey, they heard the ad on the show and now they went to the website. It converted, because right now we're sort of where radio ads are, like, oh, go to jordanharbinger.com/squadcast to get my 5% off coupon. And everyone's like, eh, whatever. Jordan's already rich. I don't give a crap. I'm just going to Google Squadcast and buy it from Google. You know, like that kind of thing hurts creators a lot. But if it's like, hey, tap your watch, or hey, go to this website and you don't have to do anything because the website already knows you came from this show, probably. So go ahead and just go to the website and buy it. And they don't need to worry about code tracking. Then they're going to, what they're seeing now preliminarily from these types of technology is that there's a lot of conversion loss and podcast ads are even more effective than they thought, which is great because that brings more money into the space. And they go, oh, we thought we were just breaking even paying you $35 CPM, but it turns out 30% of your sales weren't even using your code. Therefore, it looks like our ads are worth more, which means our CPMs go up, which means we make more money. So I'm really looking forward to a lot of the ad tech because it, and also it doesn't use a ton of PII, personally identifying information. So I don't need to know that it's Rockwell Felder and he lives at this place and he eats enchiladas a lot at the place down the corner. And he
sure know a
Facebook
lot
every morning. Yeah. Like I don't need to worry about that. I can just say, hey, guy's on an iPhone 12, you know, he's got the, he uses Chrome browser when he goes online shopping and he uses Overcast podcast player and he listens to the Jordan Harbinger show, but I don't know who he is. I do now because he bought a mattress. Thank you. But that's all we really know. And then that's not shared across the whole platform,
right,
or across the whole web with every other business, only the business where you bought the mattress, right? So I don't need to know who you are. Facebook doesn't need to know who you are. Big data doesn't need to know who you are. So it's a safer way to do every kind of bit of targeting that we need to do. And now we're seeing the laws in Europe and in California and the UK and things like that say, hey, maybe we don't want anybody to have that information. So all these platforms are like, yeah, all these platforms are freaking out because that's how their ad tech works. And podcasters are like, we're good. You know, we're not worried because you already don't know any of this stuff and you already pay us. So we're not going to lose billions of dollars a year. In fact, the money that people are going to, we're putting into platforms that they can't track anymore. So they might decide to test podcasting. And now that radio's all but officially dead, that money's going to come to podcasting too. So I'm pretty excited about that. I think we're kind of in like the second inning, you know, or so of podcasting right now, maybe the third, I don't know. We're just getting the tech that was on Facebook in 2007, right? Stuff like that. So we've got a long way to go in terms of creators getting in there, ease of creation. Squadcast going to be adding that cool video recording stuff soon, right? We're going to have all kinds of functionality. It's going to be easier to publish. It's going to be easier to convert. There's going to be so many things that help creators. And of course, adoption. You know, right now, most Americans know what podcasts are and many, many listen to them. I don't know if it's most listen. I think a lot do. But the U.S. is way ahead of Canada, Australia, the U.K., the rest of Europe, and then, of course, the rest of the world. Forget about it. You know, you see like low double-digit percentage people listening in a lot of these other countries. That we're just early on in the beginning of this. And it's going to be great when there's going to be a lot more adoption throughout this. And we'll see advertisers and geo-targeted advertising so that when you download my show from Germany, you don't hear an ad for Blue Apron that you can only get in the continental United States. You know, that stuff's going to make it more lucrative, more fun, more relevant, everything.
You know, as a big lover of podcasting, and I think a lot of us that are big fans of the space always wonder, like, you know, it's been around for 10 plus years. Like, why isn't it bigger? Why isn't it more mainstream? But you telling me this kind of makes me feel like the Chinese father that's just like, eh, we'll see. It sounds like it was a good thing that it took us this time to develop, because now we can actually build the industry of where the world is at now. Things are changing so much, and, you know, data and privacy are such a huge issue now that maybe it's a good thing that we weren't on the same trajectory of social media and all that stuff. So I think it's all sorts of things are firing in my head.
Yeah. We didn't ruin the whole thing before we knew what we were doing.
Yeah, certainly less of a liability. And we had that same opportunity with our timing with building Squadcast, like content ownership, something you mentioned. That's a first class, a part of our culture here. Same with privacy and anonymity, right? All of these things. And then
exactly
what you said about the global audience, evergreen content, future-proofing your content, some of the other ideas you shared. And then also those countries being able to see kind of their podcast future in what's happened in the United States and what's happened in Canada and what's happened in the UK. I think we can start to see how that will shake out over time. So I appreciate you breaking down your enthusiasm and what you're stoked about. Certainly a lot to look forward to, and quite a journey to get here. I know you've been a big contributing factor to defining podcasting and what an interview show can be and how big of an impact it can have. So just want to take a moment to thank you for that contribution to the podcast community and really, really celebrate that contribution. It's a big deal.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. This is a fun talk. And, you know, I love the product of Squadcast, helps me do everything easier. And I love working with you guys. So I'm excited to see what you guys have for the future.
Thank you, Jordan.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Between Two Mics with Zach and Rock from Squadcast.
The best way to record remote podcast interviews like today's in studio quality.
Visit bit.ly/squadpod to check out our resources page where you can download your free remote interview checklist.